Hey everyone, hope you're doing okay out there. It's obviously a tough time for everybody, but I will try to do some things in today's show that are going to save you money and hopefully cheer you up, maybe even entertain you a little bit. If you have run through your entire Netflix roll, just let you know, there's HBO, there's PBS out there. I'm watching this new thing on PBS called World on Fire. It's like the masterpiece thing from Downton Abbey. So hopefully you're staying entertained, maybe getting a little exercise in. So I'm going to exercise your brain today with talking about student loans. For today's show, we're going to talk about the new stimulus act that they just passed. And there are a lot of things about this that are not super finalized yet. So I'm going to give you my initial thoughts. But I want to kick today's show off first with listener questions. So if you ever wanted to ask a question for the show, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail and just talk into your phone with whatever question that you have. It's the best way to get free help is to, you know, ask a question with that recording that we can answer on the podcast. So we've got four listener questions today, and then we're going to go into talking about the stimulus bill and what it means for your student loans. So this listener's got a question about when you can recertify your income-driven repayment number.
Hi, Travis. Thank you so much for all of your help and guidance in what has been obviously a very tumultuous couple of days, weeks. One can only pray for times ahead. I just had a quick question regarding what you advised about reapplying for a new income-based repayment in light of changes in financial status. I'm a dentist working in New York. My clinic has closed indefinitely starting today. My question is, I have not yet missed a paycheck. My next paycheck will be probably around half the normal pay. I don't know what will be after that. You know, obviously, depending on what happens with the Senate and the bill that they may or may not pass. I'm just wondering if I can take action in terms of reassessing my income-driven payment amount right now, anticipating that I obviously will be missing paychecks, or I have to wait until those paychecks are actually missed and go from there. Thank you so much for your help.
Okay, great question. First of all, some of these questions come in a little bit after I'm able to answer them to get them onto a show. So I apologize about that. Obviously, the stimulus bill did pass. The good news is that any payments between March 13th, 2020 and September 30th, 2020 are suspended. That means if you were enrolled in an IDR plan on March 13th, then anything that happens between March 13th and September 30th that you had a regularly scheduled payment for would count towards loan forgiveness programs like 20 to 25 year taxable loan forgiveness and 10 year public service loan forgiveness. In this case, what we're asking about is your income took a drop, and so can you recertify your income-based payment? And the answer is yes. All you have to do that is go to studentaid.gov, and then you can go to under the kind of manage loan section. There's an apply for an income-driven repayment button. You can also go to studentaid.gov/IDR. And if you go to that button, then you'll be able to click recertify my income as one of the options after you click apply. And that's what I would suggest. And in terms of when to recertify, the good news is you don't have to worry about that because you can recertify as often as you need to or want to. If your income is falling during this time, maybe it falls multiple times, right? So maybe this person's making half salary. Eventually, this person's going to lose their entire salary and be on unemployment potentially. So if that happens, go do that, because what I'm concerned about is that after September 30th, 2020, you could have gotten a low payment after that date. And a lot of people are not going to be getting that because they're just going to basically not do anything. And then they're going to have their regular payment that was based off that pre-COVID income that's just going to start back up in September. And you could have saved a lot of money if you would recertify your income-driven payment early during this period. And then also asking for any refunds that if on payments that you might have had debited from your account between the 13th of March and September 30th. Now we got a question from Mo.
Hi, Travis. My name is Mo. I'm a dentist. You've helped me out a ton with my student loan plan, definitely in the high debt range, $640K. I just want to say thanks. Listen to your podcast. It really gives me good direction on things and a positive approach. I had two questions today. Me and my wife, we file separately, but we just started contributing to our 401ks the past few months. Now with coronavirus, is this a time that is good for us because we're like buying shares at a lower rate as things are cheaper, or should we be holding off on contributions for any reason? That's question one. Question two, my wife just finished law school. She has a job in big law, high earning, but her 2019 tax return will be very low, in a low bracket. What kind of things should we be taking advantage of with this low tax bracket at this time? Thanks so much for your help. Thank you.
Okay, so this is a great time to be buying stocks, not because of what they're going to do over the next month. I have no idea if the money that you put into the Dow when it's at like 20-something thousand is going to be worth 10,000 a month. What I do know is that long-term, U.S. stocks are an amazing investment, and you should take full advantage of stocks being at super low levels as long as you have a year's worth of cash in the bank. And if you have a steady paycheck right now, then keep buying stocks in your 401k following the usual plan that you've been doing. Keep doing your automated contributions to investments outside of retirement right now. It is a wonderful, wonderful time to buy stocks. The problem is remember that whenever you buy stocks, it's for a multi-decade time horizon, 20 years from now. It's not for what's going to happen tomorrow. So anything you might need in the next 5 years should not be in stocks right now. But anything that you need longer than that probably should. And when you know, a good rule of thumb that we use is 120 minus your age is the percent you should have in stocks. So if you're 40 years old, that means 120 minus 40 is 80% in stocks, 20% in bonds. So you just generally want to follow that formula and get started at Vanguard if you want to manage it yourself, or you could do a robo-advisor like Betterment if you wanted to have it managed for you. Here's another question from Kevin. He asks, hey, interest rates have fallen a lot. Should I be refinancing my mortgage right now? I think that what's going on is you're seeing mortgage lenders pull back from the mortgage market in a massive way. I just read a story the other day about Wells Fargo is basically pulling out of the jumbo mortgage market in a really big way, unless you have more than $250,000 in cash at the bank. I mean, that tells you that banks are panicking with mortgages and just not wanting to refinance mortgages right now. Mortgages are a component of like what are the interest rates in the economy, plus how much risk is there in the credit markets. Right now, there's enormous amounts of risk in the credit markets. Okay, like Carnival Cruise Line, I think I've read just got a 12% line of credit from some, you know, investor. That tells you that's the world's largest cruise company. So, I mean, that tells you that things are really, really bad in terms of credit risk right now. So you could certainly try to talk to your mortgage broker to see if you could get a lower rate on your mortgage, but it's unlikely at this point, I think, compared to what it was maybe a month ago. Here's a good question.
How do you think the $2 trillion stimulus bill will affect those graduating this year, planning to consolidate their student loans, their federal student loans, and try to get enrolled and repay or pay early and enrolled in PSLF as soon as possible to make those $0 per month monthly payments, you know, with the 6 month delay on student loan payments? Do you think there's going to be an issue with those of us trying to consolidate our loans? Do you anticipate there being delays, or should that still run relatively smoothly?
I think that the issue with consolidation is now is a really weird time to be doing anything, right? So we have seen people block people from switching from IBR to repay during this time, just because that's plans that count for one another under regulations. So theoretically, you could wait to change your repayment plan until after this is all over, and that's totally fine. But consolidation, you really couldn't wait until this is all over if you wanted to get credit for those months of credit basically after you graduate. Because for those that don't know, when you graduate, you get 6 months of paused payments as basically your grace period if you do nothing. So most people graduate in May or June. Most of their payments will start in November or December. But most people start their jobs in like July. And so what happens is if you're pursuing something like public service loan forgiveness, then you don't even get any of the credit for public service loan forgiveness from July to when your payments start unless you take active action. And specifically, you have to consolidate all your federal loans into a direct consolidation loan. And you can do that as soon as you've graduated. And the thing is will they still allow this? I mean, so far, we're still seeing consolidations get processed. I mean, things could change. And then I'll do a bit on the podcast explaining what happened if they did change it. But that's kind of what's going on right now is we expect there not to be any issues with consolidation. And we're still recommending people do that to speed up their PSLF and income-driven payment counting date, you know, about 4 months sooner than it would otherwise be. And that's a big reason why people that are not really highly informed on student loans definitely need to hire us for a consultation, because we could basically pay for the cost of the consultation just in fixing that consolidation issue at the very beginning. So the Stimulus Act is formally known as the CARES Act. This is an all cap acronym, CARES. So this is a $2 trillion stimulus. There's all kinds of stuff in here, and it is being put together in the middle of an economic emergency. So Congress typically doesn't move very fast. Congress typically takes months to send things through committee, and then they have hearings, and then the bills get marked up, and then the House and the Senate might have different versions, and they have a committee to fix the different versions, and then they rush it through. And there was even concerns with Congress with the Stimulus Act that people could get basically infected with coronavirus because several members of Congress actually were positive. And so, you know, you basically just had almost a virtually unanimous support for the Stimulus Act, even though it's the most expensive thing that the U.S. government has ever done. And it's necessary because the economy is falling apart. You know, that's what you can see with the unemployment numbers. So the prior, I think the first week we had unemployment numbers, it said about 3 million jobs lost. And then the most recent one was over 6 million jobs lost, which makes sense because you're shutting down the economy to save lives. So obviously, student loans are a cash outflow. The worst thing in the world right now would be to tell people they have to continue making payments on their student loans. Look, I know that you can go onto studentaid.gov/IDR and you can go update your income if your income fell, then you can get your payment recalculated. But just as we're seeing all of the unemployment offices just get absolutely overwhelmed right now, not able to physically process all the unemployment requests that are coming in, the loan servicers would have totally crashed under the weight of all of this, under so many people calling and requesting to have their income-driven repayment recalculated, most likely, at least. That's why Congress passed this bill. And you'll remember March 13th, President Trump had a press conference where he went into details about what he was wanting to do with student loans. And he just mentioned, oh, by the way, we're going to have 0% interest and you can have a forbearance for 60 days because of the COVID outbreak. And I remember some of our readers and listeners literally like took a screenshot or took like a recording while they were just sitting watching the news. And they just, I got all these emails that day like, oh my gosh, is this real? Is this really happening? What do I need to do? Tell me what I need to do, Travis. And so, you know, imagine like getting that times like 1,000, all these questions, right? So thank you for being patient with me. If you didn't hear back from me, you know, in a few days, that's why. The thing about what that press conference did is it made you request it. This is my theory of what happened. I think President Trump called up the House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, and basically said, hey, we need to do something. Let's run through this list of things we want to try to do. Student loans, do you agree with this? We need to stop payments. The final bill will stop payments and give people options, good options, so that they want to actually take advantage of the paused payments. Do you agree with that? And then I think that he just kind of said, let's just do the 60-day forbearance. Now, the problem is legislatively, Congress has to be the one to allow changes in interest rates and allow things that Trump said on March 13th. So Congress is the one that had to go and basically just make the law of what Trump was saying on March the 13th. And what they did in the final bill is really they date a lot of things from March 13th, because that's when President Trump had that press conference and things really started to fall apart with the economy and the stock market and the, you know, economic shutdown. If you think of what happened on March 13th in terms of just student loans, like really looking at the microcosm of that, you had to have been on an income-driven plan before March 13th. Okay, that's the really important date to know in terms of getting credit for things like income-based repayment, pay-as-you-earn repay, PSLF. You had to have already been enrolled as of March 13th to get credit for the 6 or 7 months during this March 13th to September 30th period, where payments are all paused for all federally held student loans. And let's just talk about that a little bit, because you know, I kind of assume that a lot of you are very familiar with these things, but I probably should back up just for a second for people who don't follow the news as closely during this time. I'm thinking, you know, what else are you going to do? You're just sitting at home looking at your phones like me, right? But summary is they're going to pause payments for 6 months for student loan borrowers with federal student loans. And these $0 a month payments count towards, you know, loan forgiveness programs, because otherwise people might have been interested in not pausing their payments. And that's not what they want right now. The federal government basically wants to stimulate the heck out of the economy because of how much it's falling apart with this planned shutdown for the COVID outbreak. If you think about student loans and making sure that people would want to sign up for this, do you want people calling into their loan servicers and requesting this? No, you don't want people calling into the loan servicer and requesting mass forbearance, because then you'd have 40 million people calling their loan servicer asking payments to be paused. So that's why the bill sets it up so that it's an automatic thing. But you can't just stop on a dime and start not deducting payments overnight, because this, you're talking again, 40 something million borrowers with $1.6 trillion of student loans. This is a very complicated, giant, bureaucratic, slow moving system. So they're really updating things on the fly. And so people are sort of panicking all over the place, wondering what's going on, just confused. And so, you know, for a while, for example, Fed Loan Servicing had the language up from the Trump forbearance for the COVID 60-day forbearance, which did not count for PSLF and for other things like that, because Congress hadn't passed the bill yet to legislatively authorize that to be the case. But what happens now is, again, March 13th is kind of like the date where everything's starting. So in other words, that March 13th date, that's the date from which you would get credit for PSLF or things like that. So even if you requested that COVID forbearance as of March 13th, if you were in an IDR plan before that, then you're going to qualify during this 6 or 7 month period of time. Now, if you were on a forbearance, just a general forbearance before that time, I actually would tell you to go ahead and apply for an IDR plan, because you only get credit if you would normally have qualified during this time. So that's my interpretation, is that if you were not enrolled in an income-driven plan, then you need to enroll in one to be able to get credit towards forgiveness during this time. You don't need to do anything to get the 0% interest, and obviously the $0 a month payments would continue, you know, even if you were already in forbearance or in school deferment or something like that. But you need to actually be enrolled in an income-driven plan. Otherwise, how can they give you credit during this time? I mean, they might eventually figure it out and try to fix it after the fact, but that's what we're telling clients to do. So let's talk about if you're in school right now. So if you're in school, you know, a lot of people have been asking me questions. Well, hey, what about if I get 0% interest? Do I get it while I'm in school? Can I take out a student loan right now? And the answer is yes. You can take out a student loan, federal student loan right now, and get 0% interest. And then you have no payments because you're in school, obviously. But you don't get any credit towards loan forgiveness programs because you would not have otherwise normally qualified. So I hope that makes sense, because if you're in school deferment, by definition, you're not making payments based on your income. You're not getting credit that would count towards forgiveness. What do you do in that case? Well, if you are not yet in your last year of your program, you can't do anything about that. You're just in school status. Just be excited that you're getting 0% interest on your student loans. If you're basically about to graduate, then this is a place where people could save a lot of money. So if you're about to graduate, we usually tell people to consolidate their federal student loans immediately after they graduate, presuming that you have no credit towards forgiveness already that you've accumulated. And the reason is because if you do absolutely nothing, the standard period they make you wait to start your income-driven payment is 6 months. So if you graduate in May or June, then one of the questions mentioned that, I think, then you're going to have to start payments in November, December. And that is not efficient, because you could start repayment after 2 months with $0 a month payments if you consolidate. So if you take advantage of your typical grace period during this time, you're going to lose 4 months worth of $0 a month payments. Now, what does that mean for a physician that is trying to pursue public service loan forgiveness? A physician trying to pursue PSLF has to pay, you know, 120 payments, you know, over 10 years. The thing is any payments you get added during your time as a resident would be payments that you would save from when you're an attending. So when you're an attending, you'd have to be making payments of maybe $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 a month, because you're paying based off of 10% of your attending income. Whereas if you're a resident and you consolidate correctly, then you're paying $0 a month. And if you do that consolidation the right way, then you're saving those 4 months of $2,000 to $4,000 payments as an attending. So literally doing consolidation the right way saves you probably anywhere from $4,000 to $10,000. You know, and that's just one example of how to save money. There's a lot of other ways to save money, like filing the right way with your taxes and optimizing your retirement strategies and putting money away, you know, just in case forgiveness gets changed. All kinds of things that you can do. The thing is, you know, you can do this on your own. You can certainly go and listen to all of our content with our podcast, the Student Loan Planner podcast episodes. There's a lot of episodes back in the archive, and there's tons of stuff on the blog about how to do this. Actually, if you go to studentloanplanner.com/blog, there's a little magnifying glass looking thing. And if you press that, you can type in anything on our site and search it, and we'll have a guide for it. But I think, you know, a lot of people would rather just pay a few $100 and make sure it's done right and have us help you figure out exactly how to do it, because we've done this thousands and thousands of times. studentloanplanner.com/help is the place to go to learn more about that if you're trying to figure out exactly how to do the right consolidation and income-driven payment setup during this time. So that's another thing to mention is just because your payments are suspended and your interest is suspended, that actually means absolutely nothing about what your long-term plan is and what your long-term strategy is. So yeah, it might take student loans off of your mind, but it doesn't do anything for the long term. It's just a short-term fix to stop the bleeding. So imagine if you're, you know, a patient bleeding to death on the operating table or something, and they just drop a magic thing where they just press the pause button, and then in September 30th, they press the play button, you know, and then the problem starts over again. I mean, that's obviously not a good analogy, I guess, right now, but you get what I'm saying, right? And the bill actually kind of reflects this. So the bill in the Stimulus Act, the CARES Act, says the Secretary of Education, starting August the 1st, shall make six communications with borrowers around the country, letting them know their payments are starting again. And they shall use mail, phone, text, email, just all kinds of stuff. That tells you how worried I think Congress is about giving this to people, but then, you know, letting them kind of forget about it, because most people spend what they make. That's the dirty little secret about American personal finances that this COVID outbreak has unfortunately exposed. We as Americans are not good savers. We as Americans, a large portion of people live hand to mouth. And part of that is because of income inequality and systemic problems and injustice. And part of it is just because people don't have good education, right? People aren't aware that, hey, you need to save 6 months of your expenses unless you want to be out on the street. I've been telling people, honestly, to increase that to 1 year worth of savings in the bank from this experience. You know, if you think about Warren Buffett, he always says that you can never have too much cash. I mean, obviously, you probably, if you have 100% in cash, that's too much. But you get the point, is that, you know, you have a lot of cash for times like this. You have a lot of cash when the economy starts crashing. You have a lot of cash when so many people apply to the New York State unemployment website that it crashes the site and people are waiting 8 hours on the phone for a simple $600 a week paycheck. I mean, that's the problem that we're dealing with right now. We did our survey. We looked at what kind of savings accounts or what kind of emergency savings, you know, you all have, and kind of seemed like the average was about 3 months worth of emergency savings. A lot of our folks are six-figure income earners, and that's, you know, that's just not enough, y'all. I mean, I know that you have a lot of expenses that you can't really get around in a lot of cases. You want to make sure your family has the best life possible, but, you know, just realize that that's going to be a big problem with just this economic crisis if it gets worse. So really, we're telling people to do 5% into their retirement savings, do $100 a month into their brokerage account, and then on top of that, work towards getting to 1 year worth of cash in the bank. That's what we're trying to tell people right now in terms of our kind of blanket advice. Some other things that are in this stimulus act, this is going to matter a lot for people that are in default. So if you are in default or you are late on your student loans and having your wages garnished, or you had your tax refund seized or something like that, there's a little bit of confusion around this right now. So you do not have to have your wages garnished. You do not have to have your tax refund seized. And the start date for this is technically March 13th, but it seems like they might be applying this a little bit earlier. So it's a little bit uncertain at this point whether or not they're going to honor that, right? Whether or not they're going to basically refund tax refunds on March 13th and after that point, or whether or not they're going to refund tax refunds that were seized after March 5th. The bill might kind of suggest March 13th, and then the Department of Education hotline that all these people that are visiting our site looking for their tax refund to come back in, they're calling and finding it's March 5th. That's a little bit unclear. I'll try to update you all on that one. What are some other ways you could save money from this? If you listen to this podcast, you know, I hope that you get rewarded occasionally with nuggets of information that save you a ton of money and reward you for listening to this versus some sort of true crime documentary thing that's just way more enticing, or Making of the Tiger King, or whatever else you listen that's maybe a little bit more entertaining than me. But this is going to save you a lot of money. Okay, so another thing that you can do is, since March 13th to September 30th is the dates between any $0 a month payments that you were normally scheduled to make count for loan forgiveness. That means this: a lot of you had payments deducted with auto debit between those dates because there was a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not those payments would count for PSLF and forgiveness, pay as you earn, things like that. So what you can do with your loan servicer is you can call and request a refund of any payments that were deducted from your account between March 13th and September 30th. I'm going to say that again. You can call your loan servicer and ask for a refund of any payments made between March 13th and September 30th. that you were entitled to a full refund for those payments. It will process over 4 to 6 weeks. It's not going to happen automatically, but that payment period counts, and you can make $0 a month payments during that time, and it counts. And we didn't know that yet back in March 13th and beyond. And if you have payments that are scheduled to deduct sometime in April, don't stress about that. If they do deduct, just call your loan servicer and ask for a refund. So that is wonderful news. And a lot of people, I actually had a consult this past week that they had a $4,000 payment deducted March 20th or something. And I told them, hey, you can call your loan servicer, it seems, and ask for a refund for that. And they were able to successfully do that. And they joked that, well, I guess that already paid for the consult 10x right there. So that's actually pretty common. We've had people in the past week, we've saved one person $250,000 projected. Another person, we saved $100,000 projected over the life of their loans. And that's the thing is, do you care about saving money over 10 years or do you care about saving money right now, right? We're still saving people a lot of money right now. You know, it's just we can't save as much money when payments are $0 a month, at least today. We're still saving the exact same amount of money for people long term. Because again, you have to have a strategy. If you don't have a strategy, this is going to continue to cause you stress. And also, a lot of people too do follow-up consults with us because they do their plan and maybe a year or two goes by and something changes. They get married, there's a divorce, there's a move, there's a job promotion, there's a, you know, a whatever, you know, a change in the economy, a change in what they want to do with their lives. And then we're actually still here for follow-up consults too for people that have already worked with us. So, I mean, knock on wood, we're not going anywhere. You know, just full disclosure, like our advertising revenue on our site, I mean, it is down probably 90%. We are getting hammered right now with our advertising revenue, like a lot of businesses, just because when student loans are at 0%, there's not a lot of reason to advertise for things like refinancing and in-school private loans. Now, you can do this if you have private loans already. Unfortunately, one of the stimulus provisions that could have gone through is they were going to make people's private loan payments for them, and that did not get passed. So private student loans can still be refinanced and should still be refinanced, because if you can find a lower interest rate, then you should go ahead and refinance your private student loan, because there's no reason not to, okay? Because if you can get a lower interest rate, then that's what you need to do. So for example, we're seeing banks right now give better rates than like fintech lenders. And the reason for that is because banks basically have access to capital from their deposits. And the Federal Reserve lowered their interest rates to basically zero, which means that banks are having to pay almost nothing on their deposits for their customers. And then you make a higher margin on lending out at anything that's at a positive interest rate. Okay, so basically most of the lenders on our site have really pulled back. But if you do have private student loans, I would check out studentloanplanner.com/Laurel Road. You have to go through specifically our link to get a cashback bonus, but I would check them out. And then I would also check studentloanplanner.com/LFI. So that's another bank out there that has access to capital. So I would check some of the more bank-based lenders right now if you do have private loans and you're trying to get a lower interest rate on those. Now, our consulting business is doing okay. So I think that's the thing that's going to keep us around, still producing content for you at the normal pace. You might see fewer blog posts published during this time because we generally pay for the blog posts with our advertising revenue. So there's something that you could do, and I don't like to ask for things. Really, I want to try to be focused on creating value and making you have a better life. But there is one thing that I would ask of you. If you've found our content useful, if you've saved money from our content, if our content has made you less anxious and just a little bit more happy in life, please share this Student Loan Planner podcast with a friend. Please share our consulting service with someone if you used us and saved a bunch of money. We need the help like every small business out there. I'm trying to pay it forward. We're trying to do a 50% tipping strategy for takeouts for restaurants to keep as many of our local restaurants in business as possible. You can donate blood. You can try to reach out to people that are struggling to try to give them some help. We might be trying to do a webinar here for people that are in student loan default for free in the coming weeks to try to help them kind of sort their finances out during this time. So we're trying to do as much as we can to give back and also stay in business during this time. I think that the other big things in the Stimulus Act were this economic injury disaster loan, I think it's what it's called, EIDL. That's a thing you can apply for right away if you're kind of an independent solo entrepreneur type person. And then there's also this paycheck protection program, which is really important if you own a business. So this paycheck protection program, you've probably seen it all over the news if you are a small business owner, but you can get up to 2.5 times your average payroll plus a bunch of other things. And so if you have like a dental practice, for example, and let's say your average payroll is, you know, $100,000 per month, then you could apply for a loan for $250,000. And if you use most of that on payroll expenses and don't fire anybody, even though you're not working, you know, everybody's kind of laid off, then you can get your entire payroll basically covered. And it turns that loan with the Small Business Administration turns from a loan into a grant if you use it to pay your people. And that's probably going to be extended if the $350 billion fund they have for that runs out. So that's another big thing in this stimulus that we're certainly applying to. Right now, it doesn't include 1099 contractors for payroll calculation purposes. If you have a 1099 business, then you have to apply on your own right now. It's just a kind of a crazy time. You know, I think that the thing that we have to all realize is the economic part of things. If you have enough savings in the bank, if you can eventually make it through to the unemployment hotline, if you can eventually figure out how to apply for these small business disaster loans and try to have frank conversations with your staff that there's 10 million people that just lost their jobs and we're really, really sorry that we're cutting your hours or having to lay you off, but we have no choice. I mean, I think just being transparent and honest with everyone economically about what you're going through, call all your people that you owe money to, see if they're willing to offer you something. You might not need it. You know, we have a small kind of mom and pop landlord and she offered to cut our rent. We said no because we felt like we could afford it and the other people probably need it more. But maybe you do need it. So go ahead and call your person you have your practice loan with, call your bank with your mortgage company, talk to your landlord, talk to, you know, I mean, if you're really struggling, talk to your cable internet companies and providers. Anything that you have a monthly payment that you can't afford right now, just have conversations with them because everybody's willing to negotiate right now, even if they claim that they're not. So I think that for student loan borrowers, I think the big things for me were just being able to get tax refunds back that were seized, wage garnishment stopping, 0% interest. The fact that the $0 a month payments count towards loan forgiveness is a big deal. The fact that you do not need to do anything physically to have this count. So you just literally have to sit on your butt and let the loan servicer just apply the forbearance automatically. The only thing that you need to do kind of proactively in terms of getting the $0 payments is if you did get something deducted after March 13th, you just got to call your servicer and ask for it back. And then you'll probably get that back over about a 4 to 6 week timeline. One other thing that was kind of interesting in this bill, they did give a tax deduction for employers, a little over $5,000 yearly that they can contribute to principal and interest for student loans and the employer can deduct it. I mean, they've been trying to do this forever. There's all these student loan companies, like employer student loan benefit companies that want to basically process this for employers and charge the employer a per employee fee to do this because it's very lucrative to have these kind of long-term recurring contracts with employers. They're going to have to renew it in January for it to be permanent. We're going to have more information on that in a little bit. I think people right now are just trying to keep their heads above water and survive. My anticipation would be if this thing does get under control, this outbreak, then what you're going to see is a lot of employers are going to be real interested in this come like November, December, when the economy has gotten back to a little bit more normal. If it does get back to the more typical normal, we don't have a second wave of this outbreak happen, right? I mean, right now, I don't know of any employers that are beating down the doors trying to give people student loan matching contributions right now because everybody's just focused on other things. So the thing that I'd say is just if you're a healthcare professional right now, thank you. My wife's a physician and she's doing her hospital week. They basically are doing like 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off kind of thing. There's all this fear that you're going to bring it home to your family, you know, fear all around, I think. And so whatever you need to do to feel safe right now, just do it. Like, you know, if that's, you know, watching something stupid on Netflix, so be it. you know, if you need to watch the Tiger King to perk yourself up, or, you know, you want to watch something silly or ridiculous, or, you know, I mean, whatever it is, like whatever your stress reliever is, do that right now because you deserve it. For me, it's like this frozen rosé ice cream thing. It's kind of terrible, but like it's just kind of a relaxer kind of thing. And also, I mean, I love nothing more than saving people money on their student loans. That's been a fantastic distraction for me to have that be a professional focus and something I can spend my time on during this quarantine while we're worried about, you know, my wife and what she's doing with the hospital and her, you know, her friends and colleagues and just what everyone's going through right now. If you're in New York, especially, please be safe. If you're in one of the hotspots, Detroit, New Orleans, or if you're just merely impacted horribly by this economically. You know, we're pulling for you. And the thing is here's something that's great to know, right? The 1918 outbreak, we had a stock market decline of 15%. And that's because we had a way worse loss of life than we are currently having. We lost 700,000 Americans. That would be like losing 3 million today. So that would be like the worst case scenario model that's been pushed around and circulated around, right, for COVID. And we had the stock market fall 15%. That's economically speaking, we would rather have this horrible economic situation than having that many people die. So if you have your life after this, if you have your family's lives, if you have your friends are okay financially, you know, the worst thing that can happen is you have a bankruptcy. That's the worst thing, right? The worst thing that happens is you have to call the unemployment hotline and maybe let them repossess your car. The worst thing that can happen is you can't pay your mortgage, right? All these things are fixable. Any economic problem I've ever encountered in my entire life is always fixable if you know what to do. If you don't wallow in your own kind of depression with it, and you don't wallow in the anxiety, and you don't let these negative emotions overtake you, you can always, always come back from anything super strong, especially in the student loan side, because that's what we're experts in. We know all the loopholes. We know the tricks. We know the things that you can do. You can save so much money on your student loans long term, right? Your student debt does not need to hold you back at all. Okay. And we will still be saving tons of money for people that do want to book a consult during this time, which you can do on our site. And if we're just encouraging you right now, then I'm super excited for that. I think that when student loans hopefully start up again in September and we're all enjoying fall weather and looking at the changing colors in the leaves and just thinking back about how we got through this together, I think that we're just going to be so in such a better place, you know, mentally, spiritually, financially. Everyone's going to be so excited when this stupid thing is over. Don't let yourself get down. Just get excited about the future, because the future is insanely bright, even though we're going through one of the biggest challenges our country's gone through in decades. Okay. So just recap of today's episode in terms of the money saving tips. If you made a payment after March 13th and you were already on income driven repayment, ask for a refund. Okay. And, you know, if you have, this is something I didn't mention, if you have loans from before 2010, you need to get a consult with us. Okay. If you have loans before 2010, I'm going to say that again, you need to get a consult with us. The reason is we'll almost certainly pay for it immediately right away, because there's a lot of loans out there from before 2010 that are not included in this payment and interest freeze. And we can help you fix that, but you're not going to probably be able to do it on your own, identify which loans are commercially held and which ones are not. You have to look through the raw data file for the national database for student loans, and it's a little confusing. So, you know, those people, I really hope that you reach out and book a consult if you have loans from before 2010, because there's a lot of people out there that have like 3% interest rates on, you know, these FFEL loans on 30-year type plans, and those payments are not going to stop, and those interest payments are going to continue accruing. And instead, you could consolidate it potentially and get it set up in a way that makes you have zero payments and zero interest. And the people that own these loans are not going to want to tell you this, because they make money if you don't consolidate it, that they actually get paid that interest amount. It's very lucrative for them. So why would they tell you that you can take advantage of this right now? You're going to need somebody that doesn't have a dog in the hunt, so to speak, to identify this. Also, too, if you've had a drop in your income compared to the last time you certified your income-driven repayment, absolutely go to studentaid.gov/IDR and then click apply and then go to recertify your income-driven repayment, because the payment that will start after September 30th will be a lot lower than it would have been if you recertify your income if it dropped. And the easiest way to do that if you lost your income completely is just to click through and say that you have no taxable income on that income-driven repayment certification online. If you had just a drop in your income, you can use your unemployment payment to certify your income. You can use a signed statement. There's really a lot of ways to prove that. So that's going to save you money after September 30th when you're coming back from this forbearance and you're having to make payments again. And then obviously, you know, we can save people money with private loans just by talking about like the different options they have in terms of should you forbear it with a lot of the new forbearance options with private lenders. Can you refinance it to get a lower payment? There's just a lot to do with that. So stay safe. Watch something funny on TV. Watch some funny videos of like penguins at aquariums walking around. That's kind of what I do every day now to cheer up. And if you have questions, comments you want to share, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. Would love to feature some more questions, especially from people about, you know, investments, student loans, just like personal finances, like job market, whatever question you've got, you know, you can go there and ask it. So thank you so much for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast, studentloanplanner.com/help. If you want to schedule a time with one of our consultants to get a plan to really know exactly what you're doing, to make sure you're handling this forbearance the right way so that you're going to save money during this time. And have a wonderful week, y'all. Thanks for listening.